Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Limited. We've got the Final Fantasy Crash Course here for you. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, Ethanara, Ethanaga, Sax, Ethan. I have done some practice drafts for Final Fantasy, and you know what that means.
You already have the format solved?
I already have the format solved, baby. The good cards I thought were good were great. The decks I drafted were great. We've got it all on lock.
Were there any cards that you thought were great where you were like, how is this still in the pack? How do people not know?
We got a how is this still in the pack. I actually said it out loud. Time while I was streaming, I was really embarrassed.
It was like the
first practice draft in.
Day -7. How is this still in the pack? Yes, I also did a practice draft yesterday while I was poring over the spoiler and getting my grades together and getting my top cards together and my format truths and everything prepped for the episode. I was like, let's see what's going on in the old Lords Limited Discord. And we were able to fire up a practice draft. And I don't have as many strong, firm takeaways as you, but I'm excited to talk about this format. It looks sweet. You seem really jazzed. I'm trying to like, I can't tell if I'm like, well, if Ben likes it so much, I have to hate it. Like, I can't tell, but there's a bit of a contrarian resistance in me right now when I'm seeing your excitement.
I'm really excited, and not just Final Fantasy wise. Like, that's not where my excitement is coming from. I think this looks like a really good format. It looks like my kind of format, where it's like it's high synergy, but there's also some power stuff going on. And I think you're going to get rewarded for doing some well done bobbing and weaving. And I love a good bob and weave in the draft portion. I think it's going to be very refreshing. It looks like you're going to need to find a lane. And I think that is going to be a breath of fresh air for me after Cons of Tarkir or Tarkir Dragonstorm, whatever it's called.
Yeah, that is what it's called. And yes, I agree with that difference. I've spotted that as well. Don't want to spoil any of our format truths or key takeaways for the episode. But yes, we will be doing the full Lords of Limited Crash Course here. So if you've never joined us for a new format season, welcome. If you're joining us again, welcome back. We're very excited to have you all here. And what we do here for a new set season is we don't do a full card by card grading set review, though we have graded all the commons and uncommons in a spreadsheet, which you will have access to if you so choose when you download the episode. It's in that little show notes there. But what we're going to be doing here is some more big picture stuff, trying to prime you for your first sealed event. What are the key cards to look out for? What are the key archetypes or synergies or things like that? And prime you for your first few drafts. And then, of course, we'll come back and apologize for all the things that we got wrong. No, just kidding. No, we're not doing that.
Not this time. I'm ready to go. Practice drafts open up a whole world for my brain. It's so good.
It's a beautiful thing. So we'll do a little housekeeping, and then we'll dive into the segments that we have for you in our new and improved Crash Course that we debuted last set and excited to do again here. So let's chat about the Patreon page real quick. Patreon.com/LordsOfLimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Two great perks we always want to shout out via the Patreon. One is what everybody gets access to, which is the Discord. We just mentioned that we've been both firing some practice drafts via the Lords of Limited Discord. That's awesome to see. And then you get to look at everybody's decks at the end and hear how they felt and, you know, just chiming in with people's big picture thoughts about the format, their individual card evaluations about the format. All those channels are popping off, and I imagine they will continue to do so once that whole channel opens up in anticipation of people's pre-releases next weekend, and then, of course, the set going live online the following Tuesday. The other thing we want to shout out is our podcast feed, where you get access to not only this episode a day early ad-free, but you also get access to our weekly bonus mini episode of Lords Unlimited. Last week we did, which is probably my favorite thing we do now on Lords Unlimited, which is our the redraftables episode, where we sort of do an extension of 50 takes and keep the Golden Egg and Imperial Oath Award things running and dole out about a dozen other awards for cards. And if you want to hear about how the podcast nearly ended over a random 5-3 crocodile, you might want to tune into that. And you can check that out via that podcast feed and that tier on the Patreon. And lastly, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Ken, Stefan, Matthew, Tactful Tempest, Dang Old Brian, and Alan. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Good old mess of names there.
So good. Okay, so we're going to kick things off with our five format truths for Final Fantasy.
This is the part I feel the least... I've hemmed and hawed about where I want to take my stand, because I could see a couple different things, but that's in the later takes.
Okay.
So I'm going to start things off with a nice, I feel very confident about take number one, which is expect a high powered, high synergy format. This is closer to a master's set than not.
So for folks who maybe are new, though, I don't know if a lot of new players are coming to our podcast first to learn about Limited. But for folks who maybe haven't played a ton of Master sets, like maybe they're only a year or two entrenched in Limited and they play Pioneer Masters or whatever. Like, what do you mean when you say that? How is a Master set different than a regular Limited set?
So regular Limited set would be all new cards. A Master set, well, sometimes Master sets now are new cards. They used to not be. They used to be like remastered sets. Uh-huh. And they are just like straight to format prints. But Master sets, like straight to Modern or straight to whatever, straight to Pioneer, get a higher power level of card and a higher power level of draft format because they're printing cards that are going to go in Eternal formats. And they're often marked by extremely powerful, extremely synergistic decks, way more so than a normal draft format that's going to go into Standard, for example. And I think this is closer to that than a normal draft format. Or thinking about Lord of the Rings from two summers ago, that looked kind of core set-ish in Sheep's Clothing. This has some similarities to Lord of the Rings, I think, but looks like even more juiced up than Lord of the Rings to me.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, I'm going to keep rolling through my takes here. We're going to go my five, then your five.
Okay.
Number two, removal will be overrated in terms of pick order. 2 to 3 pieces of premium interaction will be all you need. And not to say that you don't need removal or that you don't need to spend some high picks on it. You just don't. I don't think you're going to need 6 or 7 pieces of premium interaction. I think that, and that also is the mark typically of a master set. Like master sets typically have a lot of removal floating around and a lot of good removal. But you've got to get your synergy going or what your deck is trying to do going more than you do. Like just one well-timed one disrupting what your opponent's doing is often enough. And I think that's going to carry through in this format.
Yes, I agree with that. And that is very similar to one of my truths as well.
All right. Number three, finding your lane will be extremely important in a high synergy format with double signposts that are both good for the most part for color pairs. You should be willing to speculate aggressively until you lock in what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. But you're not going to be taking like red, white, uncommon into black, green, uncommon. Or are you thinking, yeah, I might actually do that?
I think you might actually do that. The multicolored uncommons are bangers
yeah.
in this format. They're really good. They're power outliers. Like when you start, that's what practice drafts do for you, I think. Like, or at least for me, because what I did was I graded all the cards, like what, spent 6-7 hours on Friday, like probably through the course of the day, messing around with cards and these format truths and things. Then I sat down and I did 3 practice drafts that night. And just seeing the cards in a pack, like makes you have to start to pit them against each other and in ways that you wouldn't just trying to figure out your top commons or whatever. And I think maybe I wouldn't have answered that question yes after doing the practice drafts, but I think after doing the practice drafts, I found myself doing that quite a bit, because I think if you find what's open, you're gonna get hooked up.
Yeah, that tracks for me as well.
All right, these are the ones that I went back and forth about quite a bit, and I kind of want to talk through them with you because I'm curious if you did anything like this in your format truths. So number four for me, I went out on a limb with some initial color power rankings.
Okay, this is so funny. I tried to get step away from that because I felt like I was too dialed into that last time. Okay.
So I want to talk through this with you if you didn't do it on yours.
Uh-huh.
Initially, I've got red, number one, white, two, blue, three, green, four, and black, five. But I'm having second thoughts about all that, especially after doing the practice drafts. I found myself ending up in Sultai stuff a lot. There's a lot of good cards in the Sultai wedge.
And they kind of do similar things, like black-green caring about the graveyard and blue-black caring about filling your graveyard. So they're in a bit of an overlap there. I had some similar thoughts. For me, but I guess this is a spoiler, but this is the place to talk about it. White looks like the clear front runner for me for best color. I do have red as number two. And then I think I would put green at number three, maybe. It's tough. The other three colors, blue, green, and black, have a lot of things that I like about them. Like, we'll talk about this when we get to blue. Blue I like, except all of its colors all of its cards feel very distinct in terms of it goes in one of the four archetypes. And there's not a lot of overlap, which is one of the things white does, is white's like, hey, all of my mechanics overlap, and this card would be great in any of these four white decks, you know? And black is a weird thing where I like a lot of black's commons, and I like almost none of black's uncommons, which I can't tell if that's a blessing or a curse for the color.
Oh, I feel flipped. I like black's uncommons way more than black's commons. That's interesting. I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Okay, great. All right, what's your fifth truth here?
I feel better about my fifth truth here, except I'm not sure which way it's going to skew. So my fifth truth is the most powerful decks to draft initially will be Jeskai color pairs that are high synergy. However, Sultai decks are less synergistic overall, but they have banger gold uncommons to make up for it.
So you're telling me that Ben Wernie wants to start drafting Jeskai in a new format?
Shocking, I know. Shocking, I know. Never believe it.
That's a truth I can stand behind.
But I think I see the format as two poles, like Jeskai synergy, Sultai power.
Okay, cool. So my format truths. Number one, I had to say it, that this is a rectangle theory format.
Ooh.
And so for folks who are not entrenched in Lords of Limited lore, rectangle theory is just a way to talk about things that aren't necessarily two for ones, but they make more than a card of value. So a card that comes in and makes a food token or a treasure token. We have all of these job select equipment in the format that are equipment that come with a 1/1 and auto attached to them. So they're basically creatures that die into equipment. And so that's just rectangles abound. I think games will be defined by incremental resource advantage, which isn't to say I think the format will be slow necessarily, but I think that kind of 1.5 for 1, 1.5 for 1, 1.5 for 1 compounded on itself is what's going to define the games.
Okay, I like that take.
Number two is almost identical to your number two. I said removal will be less desirable than usual, given the 2-for-1 or rectangly nature of the format. With an asterisk, cheap removal will still be powerful since you can also use it to leverage tempo. So it's not only going to be, oh, I can remove this key threat from you, but also, well, if it's not a key threat, if I'm not getting a full 2-for, or you know, you got a 2-for-1 and I'm only killing your job select token, it doesn't feel that bad because I'm still able to double spell that turn or whatever.
Yeah, I will say there are great rares, and we're going to talk about some of the rares on Lords Unlimited. You're going to need removal for the multicolor uncommons and the rares.
Yes.
And timing those out is going to be a big deal. Like, a lot of the rares say you have a one turn window to kill me or you're going to be in big trouble. Like, and if you can have that removal spell waiting for that turn when they drop a rare, I think that's going to be big game.
Yeah. Number three, commons are back again and will play a large part in deck composition. This was sometimes when we go through commons, it's like I like get to a list of eight and I'm like, okay, I guess I need to round out this list of notable commons with a couple more. This one, I feel like I could have had a list of 20. I did pull a Ben and I have over 10 in my notable commons list. My sleeper commons list is robust. I like the commons in this format a lot. And not just like coming off of Tarkir Dragonstorm where, yeah, we had the exhales and those mattered a lot. Like cheap interaction was what you got at common. I think you get that here, but you also get really good threats. You get really good synergy pieces. You get maybe even potentially some build arounds. Like the commons are sweet.
Commons are sweet. I agree. And that was something I kind of took away from our conversation with Ben White as well. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he made it seem like they had a renewed emphasis on commons being important in play boosters, like a little bit later in the play booster design process. So I wonder if we're going to see commons mattering more in play boosters going forward, because there definitely was a chunk of time where it was all about uncommons. And I do still think the uncommons are a huge part of it.
I'm thinking of it almost like Foundations level of commons mattering, like that the commons are going to be that part of the deck composition. And this leads to my next point, but I think the color pairs do what they say they do. They all look supported and viable to me currently. Like, I don't have I don't want to touch that right now. Like, to your point about, I think this is a similar point to your, like, the double signposts, and a lot of those double signposts look great. And I think, like, getting in your lane, finding your lane, whatever, and all 10 decks being viable. But I think those decks are going to, or the optimal versions of those decks are going to largely look the same. And that's because I think the commons are powerful. And so you're going to know, like, well, I want as many of these five or six commons in my blue-red deck as I possibly can. And you're just going to know, like, looking at someone's blue-red deck, oh, that's a great version, or, oh, why are you playing these cards?
Yeah.
So that's my number four, which is this will be I called it a paint by numbers draft format. Color pairs do what they say they do and all look supported and viable.
Yes, love that.
Number five, understanding the difference between secret gold cards, of which there are a lot, and flexible multi-archetype role players will be the key to navigating drafts in Final Fantasy.
Ooh, spicy. And do you have some of those cards picked out, perchance?
Well, they'll definitely be the cards that I think are the notable commons in their colors are definitely the most flexible ones. The ones that I think, and it's one of the reasons I like white so much, is that white's commons, and as we'll get to when we talk about the format truths, one of the reasons I like white and red is it feels like their mechanics overlap in a really nice way. And so most of their commons can slot into a lot of those. And I think those are colors that you'll be able to get deep into. Right, you can sort of navigate drafts by getting deep into white, deep into red. I think that might be harder in something like blue or green, where blue's cards are like, a lot of them are like, this is a blue card, but it's really a blue-green card. And this is a blue card, but it's really a blue-white artifacts card. And so it's going to be a lot harder to navigate drafts by getting deep into those colors, where the commons are much more truly secret gold cards.
Yes, I agree. And I almost think, like, to my point about Jeskai versus Sultai, I think if your drafts start with power, I mean, sometimes they'll start with power in those Jeskai colors and you'll still end up with a Jeskai synergy deck. But I like with what you're saying with all of white's cards pointing in the same direction, I see that as well. So I think you'll steer towards Sultai when your draft starts with power in those colors. But I think like the default place to steer, if you're just like having to forge your own way with commons and uncommons and didn't open busted, is going to be towards those white red style decks.
Well, this is a great segue. Let's start talking about these colors. So what we'll do is we each have an identity we've defined these colors by, and then we will talk about the notable commons from those colors and our top three uncommons each from those colors. Ben, why don't you kick us off with your color identity for white?
Okay, so my thoughts on white, it's got a lot of great commons. If the job select equipment cards turn out to be good, I anticipate that those will, in fact, be good. I think its best commons really want to be blue-white, red-white, and black-white more than they want to be. Like, I think green and white are a bit at odds with each other, at least as far as white's best cards. And I think white's uncommons also want to play in that job selectee equipment theme. White looks very synergistic, very straightforward, very focused, I think, which is a great place to be.
For me, I said that white looks absolutely incredible. I already spoiler when you threw out your color power rankings. I think white is the best color. I think it might even be stronger than white in Tarkir Dragonstorm. It looks like the card quality is very high. And the overlap, the inherent synergy overlap among artifacts, equipment, multiple bodies to either sacrifice or go wide for the green white sort of thing. Like, green white is just like play to the board deck, but all of that stuff, like your job select cards go in all of those decks, right? That's a card that goes in artifact matters, equipment matters, multiple bodies to sacrifice, or green white play to the board, which is just incredible that white gets a lot of cards like that that go, yep, I can go in any of these four decks and I'll be good in any of these four decks.
Yes, Okay, so getting into White's notable commons, I've got Magitek Infantry, which is Whisper Squad 2.0 or maybe 0.5. I'm not sure. Remains to be seen.
It's better, single, right?
Is it better? Single white for a 1/1. It gets +1/+0 as long as you control another artifact. And you can pay 2 and a white to search your library for a card named Magitek Infantry, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle.
So for folks who didn't play in Ikoria, there was a card like this that was single black for a 1/1 that could search up copies of itself. It didn't have the +1/+0 text, but it did only cost 2 to search up other copies.
Three's a lot.
But a 2/1.
But a 2/1.
Right? Because it grows itself.
Yeah. But a 2/1.
Yes. I like this card a lot. This is also on my list.
I'm a little nervous about Magitek Infantry. That's the one I think I'm least confident about from White.
Why are you nervous about this card?
Because, well, let me get to my other White cards, and then we'll talk about what I think the ranking of them needs to be. So also, White Mage of Staff made the list, which is 1 and a white for job select, a 2/2 that whenever it attacks, you gain a life, and the equipment gives +1/+1 and gains you a life. So there's White Mage of Staff. I think that one's just going to be a bread and butter common. And then the last white one I have on the list is Weapons Vendor, which is 3 and a white for a 2/2. When it enters, draw a card. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you control an equipment, you can pay 1. When you do, attach target equipment you control to target creature you control. So I think that Weapons Vendor is going to be the most important card for making white decks work.
Interesting.
And so I think if you pick Magitek Infantry like it's the number one white common, I think you're in danger of having a bunch of Magitek Infantries that aren't that good and are going to get outclassed in the late game. So there were times in Ikoria, for example, that you could end up with 4 or 5 Whisper Squads and it was outstanding because there were cards like that wanted you to sacrifice bodies. That's what it was all about. And I don't really see the sacrifice stuff here for Black-White. Like, there is some sacrifice things, but there's not just a sacrifice deck like it was in Ikoria to me from what I see. There's no Bushmeat Poacher, for example, which was a 2/4 that lets you sack a thing to draw a card. So I don't see any engine-y stuff like that. And so I think it might be slightly harder to use the multiple bodies. And I think the 3 mana might be a little bit much. Now, that being said, like, if you get 3 of them, you're definitely running all 3. I just think I'm a little nervous about making that my number one white common, which was what I initially thought going into the drafts. But I think you have to have Weapons Vendor to make the job select stuff good after you trade it off. I think it drawing a card, giving you velocity. I just think Weapons Vendor is going to be allow you to be aggressive, yet also grind into the late game.
So Weapons Vendor weirdly did not make my notable commons list. And I'm obviously could be wrong about this, but my thought was that it was really going to be great in red white and less important in the other 3 decks. But that might be in opposition with my idea of like, well, job select cards are, I do think all the job select cards basically are just great, especially the white ones. And so maybe that just means Weapons Vendor is going to be great in any white deck. But I feel like if you're not using the second ability, 4 mana 2/2 draw card, that isn't that good of a limited magic card.
I agree, but you should be using the second ability if you're white and you're valuing White Mage's Staff and Paladin's Arms, which is the one that makes a 3/2 ward 1.
Yes, which is on my notable commons list.
Yeah. So that's my thought about Magitek Infantry, where initially when I saw it, I was like, oh, easy number one white common. And after drafting a little bit more and thinking more about what white wants to do, I feel like Weapons Vendor and the 2 pieces of job select equipment play so well with each other that you're going to pick those higher than Magitek Infantry. So Magitek Infantry to me is going to end up in a place where it's like, oh, if you get 3 of these, it'll probably be really good for you. But I'm a little nervous about picking it ahead of Weapons Vendor, and then I'm unsure about it, and I think I'm going to start on the side of slightly lower.
So you're thinking that whereas Whisper Squad, you might pack one, pick one out of a weak pack, and be like,
correct,
okay, cool. Magitek Infantry, you're like, I'll clock it, pack one, pick one, and if I see 1/6, take that maybe and try and wheel it. But it's not something you're aggressively going after like you would Whisper Squad.
I think that's my thought.
That tracks for me. So my notable commons, we've almost all talked about. I have the infantry. I have the White Mage's Staff. I have Paladin's Arms, the other job select equipment. That's a 2 and a white, gives a thing +2/+1 and dies into an equipment that gives that for equip four. And I also have a fairly contentious card. I know this is not on your list, which is the white common Saga. Summon Chocomog is 2 and a white for a 3/3. And it has 4 chapters. And it's the same thing on all 4 chapters. Other creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. I like basically all of the Saga creatures, like to varying degrees, but I think the 3 common ones all look great to me. And the fact that they all have 4 chapters means that, like, it's going to be pretty, like, the 3 chapter ones, I feel like you really have to make sure you get value off of whatever their ETBs are. The 4 chapter ones, I'm like, a 3-mana 3/3 that anthems your team that's going to stick around for 4 turns, get to engage in combat twice. Like, I feel like you're going to get good value from this.
Well, but it doesn't stick around for 4 turns, right? Like, for 4 turns. That's I think, something we need to, like, dive in on these summons. So comes down chapter one. It's around for 3 turns of blocks. The ones that have 4 chapters are around for 3 turns of blocks,
mm-hmm.
2 turns of attacks, and then are going away but giving your team the buff on the last turn.
And notably that this comes down in your first main phase, pre-combat, and buffs your team that turn too. So, like, even if you curve out with this, like, buffing your 2-drop, later on, if it comes down in your double spelling, it buffs your other creatures and enables attacks for you. So it even has relevance on attacks the first turn you play it.
Yes, I think this is a really aggressive card. White's deep.
White's deep, like, man.
White's deep, and all its cards want to play together. I agree with that. The question is, you're really going to have to be focused on aggro, going wide, etc. with this. So to me, I left this off my notable commons list because I think you're going to know when you want it, but maybe I'm just wrong. Like, I could certainly see it just being great and that you're supposed to pick it. You know what I mean?
I mean, how good would, like, just erase it being a saga.
Mm-hmm.
How good is 3-mana 3/3, other creatures you control get +1/+0?
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Now, this doesn't do that, right? Your creatures don't always get +1/+0. They don't get them on blocks. It's only on attacks. I don't know. I usually am a negative card. I'm usually only seeing the downside of a card, but I look at this and all I see is upside.
That was one of the funniest things about our grades. I had to look to find cards that I graded higher than you. You were much higher than me overall this time around, and usually we're flipped.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I must have gotten a good night's sleep or something when I was grading yesterday.
Jonah slept until 7 a.m.
Yeah, right. Okay. What's going on with your uncommons?
Well, hang on. I want to dive into Chocomog a little bit.
Okay, sorry.
So, to me, Chocomog is like you're building a go wide deck. Like, I think you have to be truly trying to go wide before you're super jazzed about Chocomog. Do you disagree with that take?
I disagree with that take. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think in whites, I guess I disagree that you're trying to go wide. I think a lot of the cards that we've already shouted out in white are making a bunch of little creatures.
Yeah, but they're not making multiple bodies.
I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, they're making one thing that attacks.
Correct. I mean, Magitek Infantry is potentially making multiple bodies as it's searching them up.
But yeah, but the thing that Magitek Infantry can't do is it's never getting 2 in 1 turn the way Whisper Squad could. Like, on
that
4 that you could search up 2, like, it cost it. Like, so you're only ever putting a thing on the battlefield per turn, even with Magitek Infantry.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just don't think you need to, like, have a bunch of 1/1 tokens to make Chocomog good. Giving +1/+0 to 2 other things for 3 attacks is really good.
It's really good, yeah.
And attached to a 3-mana 3/3. I don't know.
I just worry about that folding to a single removal spell, and then your Chocomog didn't end up doing that much damage and is going to go away. That's my concern. Okay,
yeah.
Getting into the uncommons. Number one uncommon for me overall, Dragoon's Lance. This is 1 and a white for the job select. It's a 2/1 flyer and a re-equip cost of 4.
It's only flying on your turn.
Only flying on your turn. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
That card looks great. Plays in White's equipment theme very well. Number two, I've got Ambrosia Whiteheart. 1 and a white for a 2/2 flash bird. When it enters, you can return another non-land permanent to your... Oh, actually a permanent, even if you want to. It could be a land. So if you want to re-trigger that Choco... Choco landfall. And then it has landfall. Whenever a land you control enters, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn, as do most of the Chocos.
And that's like particularly sweet. You can pick up your sagas, right? You can pick up your job select equipment and get another 1/1. It's got a lot of synergy in the format.
Yeah, I just think it's a very versatile card. You're going to be fine playing it on turn 2. You're going to be fine playing it on turn 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the number 3 slot, I've got Summon Primal Garuda. 3 and a white for a 3/3 flyer. Chapter 1, it deals 4 to target tapped creature and opponent controls. And then chapters 2 and 3, another target creature you control gets +1/+0 and gains flying until end of turn.
I want to talk about this one. It's very interesting to me that you don't like the white common, but you do like this one, or you like the white uncommon more than you like the white common. And I feel quite reversed. And part of the thing, one of the reasons that I left this off my list was I'm really reluctant to put a card like this in my deck, or I'm nervous about a card like this that I don't necessarily want to cast on turn 4, because there is a real possibility. Like, if you don't get the ETB on this, you're not casting it, right? If you don't get to kill something, you're not casting it.
Correct.
And there are worlds where you don't get that with this, but this is your 4-drop in your hand. And what do you do then on turn 4?
But isn't it also, like, if that's the case, you're ahead, right? Aren't you fine to run this out and potentially push, like, if you're ahead and you run this out and flyers are good for you, you're potentially pushing, like, 10 damage with this card or something. Like, the second turn, it's going to launch something into the air to do 4 damage, and it attacks for 7, and then the last turn it launches another thing for, like, another 4 or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, when this does everything, it's incredible. I really do think that's true. I'm just worried about, it makes me nervous that I could look at this on turn 4 and go, I don't actually have anything to kill with this.
Sure.
Or I don't have a board to take advantage of the +1/+0. I don't know.
So to pit the Primal Garuda versus the Chocomaw, which is the 3/3 that gives your team +1/+0. Here's what I value from the Primal Garuda. It can flip the script of the game. Like, you can be behind or whatever, similar to like a 1-mana instant deal to, like, how you can take back the play. Primal Garuda can take you from, well, I'm kind of losing, to, oh, my opponent is in trouble. Like, it can when you land it, it can change the game. The Chocomaw is only ever going to, like, be one directional. Like, you've got to be ahead. Otherwise, it's pretty ho-hum. If you're not ahead, like, I think it is situationally excellent if you time it out right. That's why I think you have to build around it almost. Whereas Primal Garuda is like a game warping card potentially. I don't think Chocomaw is ever game warping unless you're already ahead.
Not in the way you're talking about. Not in the way you're talking about, but which I hadn't thought about with the Primal Garuda. So that's a good point. I'm be very curious to see how that card plays out. It won't take long, though. I feel like one very bad experience with that card, like in early access, will taint my opinion of it forever. It was stuck in my head. It wasn't good that one time, or it was incredible that one time. So my white uncommons, I also have Dragoon's Lance number 1. I have Battle Menu number 2. Talk about versatile. This is 1 and a white for an instant, and you can choose 1 of 4. You can make a 2/2 white Knight creature token. You can give target creature +0/+4 until end of turn. You can destroy target creature with power 4 or greater, or you can gain 4 life. I just think that optionality is great. I think the two modes you're going to use the most are probably make a 2/2 or destroy a thing with power 4 or greater, but nice to have the option to save something, make its toughness bigger, whatever, and maybe you need to gain 4 life in a pinch. I just think the 4 options there are awesome. And my 3rd one is Magitek Armor. This is 3 and a white for a 4/4 vehicle. When it enters, you make a 1/1 colorless hero creature token, and it has a crew cost of 1. A nice nice return to Aether Drift with our 5/4 common. This is just like that, but a mana cheaper.
Yep. Okay. White, looking good. We have a couple grading differences
to discuss here
for white. So okay. We should let people know that we graded all the cards in a spreadsheet that'll be available where you download the episode. We're only going to touch on a couple of the ones where we had major grading differences, kind of pick some cards to champion or just maybe try to talk the other person up on. First of those is Adalbert Steiner, 1 and a white for a 2/1 uncommon with lifelink, and it gets +1/+1 for each equipment you control. A gives a build around, B, you give us a C+.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of saying the same thing. I just don't think I'm ever picking this that highly. It feels like a, to use other parlance from the show, it feels like a reward rather than a reason for going after equipment stuff. Like, I just feel like I'm going to be taking job select cards over this. And then if I get this, great, because I've got a bunch of job select cards, but I like those better than this.
Lifelink's so good, though. Like, can't you see the world where this, like, you get to the late game, you got two equipment, this comes down as a 2-mana 4/3, and then you put another equipment on it. Like, I think this is a 2-drop, similar to, I almost had this in my top commons. This was the one that didn't make the cut.
Or my top uncommons, I mean.
Yeah. It's similar to the 2/2 that can pick something up, the Choco, but it's slightly less versatile, but I think it's similarly good on turn 2 and turn 8 in the white equipment decks. It's a little narrower, which is why I ultimately cut it from my list, but I think it's going to be very good in red-white.
Right, very good in red-white. Well, I also it also might just be good in any white deck if we're valuing it. It'll
be good enough. Like, you're never cutting it from a white deck. It's just a good card.
Certainly never cutting it from white deck. I agree with that. I just think, like, I think the job select cards are going, or the good job select cards, most of them are good. Some of them, I think, are less good. But the good job select cards are going to be high picks. And I think you have to take those before you take Adelbert Steiner is how I'm going to approach drafts initially.
Okay, I like it.
All right, that takes us on to blue. We already touched on our other grading differences cards in our top uncommons. So I'll tell you my color identity for blue. I said lots of strong synergy pieces, but almost no overlap between blue-green towns, blue-red 4-mana, blue-black graveyard, and blue-white artifacts. I think my approach to blue will be to lock it in as a support color more often than a color that I'll be getting deep into at first.
Yeah, I have some very similar thoughts. Its commons are a very small feast, like where they're excellent and then they drop off a cliff and are kind of famine looking. I also think blue looks better as a support color. Its best commons are going anywhere, which is great for a support color. And then it has some very niche role players, and its uncommons similarly. Like, a lot of its uncommons obviously go in one deck, and they're very premium in that one deck. I anticipate that blue's going to be a support color, but a very good one.
Yeah. Well, and I think speaks to the, like, I just feel like I see right now clearly those secret gold cards. And I just think being really cognizant of that and being like, oh, I'm seeing that and then that. Or maybe you get a very clear signal with a signpost and then start seeing the secret gold cards at common for that color pair. Like, I think that it's not to say that I don't think blue's powerful. It's just that early on in the draft, I anticipate blue feeling a bit less comfy of a place to start in.
Yes, I could certainly see that.
So a couple blue notable commons. One is Dragoon's Wyvern, 2 and a blue, 2/1 Drake with flying. And when it enters, you make a 1/1 colorless hero creature token. These flyers plus 1/1 token creatures. This one has 1 toughness, not 2 toughness, but I think even so, these are often the top commons in the set. And I expect the Wyvern to play similarly. And then I also have Retrieve the Esper, 3 and a blue for a sorcery, make a 3/3 blue robot artifact creature token. Then if this spell was cast from a graveyard, put 2+/+1 counters on that token, and you can cast it from your graveyard by flashing it back for 5 and a blue. Like, you can just look at this card and you see all of, we talked about this last week, but I think it's worth reiterating now that we have the full picture. But like, this card just sits at the intersection of all 4 of those decks. It's 4 mana for a non-creature spell twice. It makes an artifact token for blue-white artifacts. It's something to ramp into with your lands from your blue-green towns. And if you happen to do some self-mill or some looting to get this into your graveyard in your blue-black decks, it has flashback for you. So it sits at the intersection beautifully of those 4 decks. And that's what I'm looking for from my commons.
I agree. I bumped, so first of all, Dragoon's Wyvern, my list also. I think that is likely to be the best common in the set, or top 3. Like, I think it's a whatever. The betting odds are high for Dragoon's Wyvern on the pack 1, pick 1 best common.
Okay.
And Retrieve the Esper, I initially had in my notable commons list, and after doing the practice drafts, I bumped it out because I felt like I never quite wanted to spend a pick on it. And I think this is a card you're going to know really quick after playing with it about how powerful it is. And I agree that it sits everywhere, but I think there are so many cards that are, I don't think it's good enough to let you delay the decision. Like, so I think what the more likely thing is going to happen is that it's not going to be a super high pick, but that you're going to be great picking it up, pick 6, 7, 8 on the wheel, and you'll play it in all your blue decks. But I don't see it as being a format defining common. I think it's just going to be a nice card that you'll play in a lot of blue decks.
Okay. Did you have any other blue cards on your list?
I didn't. Just those two. And then like blue falls off so hard. But Dragoon's Wyvern is so good. That's where with my color power rankings, I almost wanted to bump blue down to last because its cards are so specific. It's tough.
I agree. Looking at blue's uncommons, I have similar feelings. Like I like a couple of them a lot and then they kind of drop off. The first one I have is Ilmeg Pixie. One and a blue for a 2/1 flyer. And when it attacks, you surveil one. That's just a great rate and a great ability. Like, it's just a good card. Doesn't need to even talk about it sitting at the intersection of four decks. It just is good. Number two, I have Summon Shiva. 3 blue-blue for a 4/5 enchantment creature saga. Chapters 1 and 2. Tap target creature and opponent controls. Put a stun counter on it. And chapter 3, draw a card for each tapped creature your opponents control. I really like this card. I think it's going to be... It's great on offense and defense, but especially good on offense. And then I was sort of torn between two, but I gave a nod to a card that I'm sure you have on your list because you love this effect. Thief's Knife, 2 and a blue for an equipment with job select. Equipped creature gets +1/+1, has whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, draw a card, and a re-equip cost of 4. I just figured let's save our listeners the 12th time where you go, what you miss about this card is that it changes the game. I had that conversation by myself and then put it on my list.
There's the Commander Game Changers list with all the Commander's cards. This is a limited game changer effect, the scroll effect. I have those same three cards, slightly different order. I've got Shiva number 1, the Pixie number 2, and Thief's Knife number 3 also.
Great.
I agree. All three of those cards look strong, but again, it falls off pretty hard after that, and they're not... I'm a little worried about blue. Like the more I think about it, I don't know. It's so early to be me making sweeping takes like this, but I am. If I were worried about being wrong about a thing, it's blue.
I just think like the way to save yourself from that. And I agree. I have all the hesitancies is just to like, just don't get deep in blue. I'm just like hoping to not start a draft in blue. That doesn't mean I don't like blue, but like if I see Ilmeg Pixie as the best card in my pack one, pick one, I'm a little nervous about doing that. Like, I think I would rather start with a card that I thought was weaker, but if it's in white or red where I'd like to get deep in a color or feel better about pivoting around, I think I feel better about that. All right, what's going on with black for you?
Okay, so my notes on black, which I have some more insight into after the practice drafts, I feel like. You joke about the practice drafts. The practice drafts really helped me, truly.
It's just a bit now. That's why I'm smirking.
So I think black's commons really help the black-red mage deck if that's a good deck. And after doing the practice drafts, I'm a believer in black-red mages. I think it's very good. Like, so you can, the cool thing about doing the practice drafts is you can see every seat and the deck that was drafted in every seat. And almost every draft, there was what looked like a very focused black-red mage deck. And so I'm a pretty big believer in that deck working at this point. The one thing I don't like about what that deck appears to be is similar to what we were talking about with blue. Like, it's very specific and you like all the cards go in that deck and they're very obvious that they go in that deck. So if you're fighting for it with somebody else, don't love it. But I think if you're the only black red mages drafter, that looks good. It looks like it works to me. And then my notes were, if that deck doesn't work, black looks a little rough at common, but I think that deck works. So I think I'm a believer in black at common after that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that tracks with what I think about black, which is that I think its commons are better than its uncommons, which I'm not sure if that's a good look for a color in the play booster era. I'm not seeing a lot of power in black's monocolored uncommons. I agree that I think black's strongest trait is the non-creature spell wizard stuff that leans red black. I will say there's one small, like, I don't know, it's like a glaring thing that I'm like, is this slightly nerfed? That the black green stuff that counts permanents in the yard seems like it's less good, where like lots of the permanents are created by equipment. Those equipment aren't going to the graveyard, they're going to stay on the battlefield, or non-creature spells. Like, there's a lot of things that make creatures that affect the board that aren't actual summons. And I'm wondering if the black green, like caring about permanents in the yard, will be slightly worse because of it.
I don't think so. I think you're going to be able to draft black green in such a way that you just value the permanents and you don't put those spells in your decks. Although a lot of those cards are quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think between Town Greeter, which is the one in a green one that mills four, and there's also a black common, a 2/3 that mills three and gains you three.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're going to be able to turbo mill your deck if you want to.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So what black commons made your list?
Only one, which is Vayne's Treachery. One on a black instant, kicker, sacrifice an artifact or creature. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. If the spell was kicked, that creature gets -6/-6 until end of turn instead. And I initially did a thing where I almost put no black commons on my top commons list because I was kind of down on black initially. But the more I look at black, the more I'm coming around on it. I think black has been steadily climbing for me in my estimation, enough so that I'm questioning. And I almost did a bit where I didn't put any removal in my top 10 commons, but I decided that was too big of a bit. So Vayne's Treachery made it for me.
Yeah, Vayne's Treachery made it for me as well. And I think this other card is going to be great, which is Hecht Eyes. One on a black 1/1. When this enters, each opponent discards a card. Like, this effect has been... There just hasn't been a set I can think of where this effect hasn't been a top common. Like, Burglar Rats is just great. And this is a great format for it because it does a thing and then you're going to have things to do with this as a body on the battlefield.
That's the thing, though. Like, I just don't see that many sacrifice outlets. There's Vayne's Treachery.
I mean slapping equipment on this thing.
You just mean, sure. Yeah. It's the re-equip costs are so expensive, but maybe.
I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Hecht Eyes is going to be... second best black common. It might be even number one ahead of Vayne's Treachery, but I'll say second best.
Wow. Okay. It's on my sleeper commons list. I like the card.
I'm saying it's woken up. It's awake.
Talk to you in 2 weeks is a little aggressive.
okay.
A little aggressive.
Okay. I'll just cool it down a little bit.
I was like, oh, gloves off. Let's go, buddy. It got me fired up. I do think... I would take the bet of I'll see you in 2 weeks from a card that's on my Black Sleeper Commons list, which is Black Mage's Rod. I want to see you in 2 weeks about which is better between Black Mage's Rod and Hecht Eyes, because I love Black Mage's Rod for the Black-Red deck. I think that is going to be... I think if you're in Black-Red, Black Mage's Rod is the best Black Common, and I think Black-Red looks like the best Black deck to me.
I think I agree with both of those takes. I just don't think you're going to need to pick, based on my one practice draft, if we're basing lots off practice drafts, you don't need to pick Black Mage's Rod that highly.
That's fair. So here's why, can we talk about why Black's been moving up for me? I think
yes.
It's so interesting. I try really hard before we record this episode to not see other people's opinions.
Yes.
Especially people whose opinions I value, because it's so easy to just like default to their right or whatever. So I saw... Sam's opinion that he was down on black, and I also was kind of feeling that way looking through, but I had that in my head, and I do trust Sam's opinion a lot. I think he's a really good card evaluator, and if you haven't checked out his new podcast Rough Drafts, you should be. But the more I look at black, if black red works, and I think it does, that's a great deck. Black green's gold uncommons are absolute bangers.
Yes.
And that deck looks supported. Like, black-green graveyard stuff looks like a real deck to me. Black-blue's gold uncommons are both bangers. Like, I just think there's a lot of power there. And I also like black's uncommons. I'm not down on black's uncommons the way that you are. So all of that makes me think that I kind of am in on black.
Well, and the one thing you haven't talked about is that I felt like I have three black commons on my sleeper list. Like, I could have put five. When I made my initial pass, I had five black commons on my notable commons list. And that's not even including, which I don't think will be a notable common, Sephiroth's Intervention, the instant speed kill spell that's four mana.
Yeah.
But like, I think black has a lot to like. So let's get into the uncommons, because we've alluded to this enough. Let's talk about these cards specifically.
Okay, number one, I've got The Final Days, which looks like an absolute banger. Two black sorcery uncommon, make two tapped 2/2 black horror creature tokens. If this was cast from a graveyard instead, you create X of those tokens, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard, and it's got flashback for 4 BB.
This is the first time I heard the word tapped on those, and I'm getting real rise from the tides.
I had not noticed that either until I just read it. I still think it's good enough, though.
Yeah, it's significantly less good, though. But yeah.
It is significantly less good.
That's rough. Okay. Okay.
So for those of you, again, for those of you not steeped in, the reason Ethan and I are both laughing here, if you're not steeped in Lords of Limited lore, there was a longstanding joke about Rise from the Tides I was obsessed with, and I just needed one more turn, and I would win.
Because they come into play tapped.
Because they come into play tapped, and then you would just always lose. Rise from the Tides, you lose.
Yeah.
Okay, so Final Day is number one. I have Fang, Fearless, Elsie. In the number two slot, two and a black for a 2/3. Whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, you draw a card and you lose one life. This ability triggers only once each turn, and it can meld with another green card into some 7/6 awesome uncommon.
So that card did not make my list. We didn't trigger Kishla Skimmer that much in the Harmonize Retrace format. I mean, you did. You could trigger it. But not that much. Like, that card was good because it was a 2-mana 2/2 flyer. If that card was a 2-mana 2/2 with that ability, I think it would have been significantly less good. And that's sort of how I'm feeling. Like, I think that card will be good in black-green. Like, really good in black-green, maybe. But I don't know if it'll be that good at anywhere else.
But there's just flashback cards running around, too. And I think in Tarkir Dragonstorm, the format wasn't about smaller synergies, and I think this format is format is less intrinsically powerful, and you're going to have to build, like, you're going to have to do work. You're going to put the pieces together, and when you do the thing, you're going to get rewarded. That's how I see the format, and I think I see a lot of opportunities to do the thing with this card, and maybe it's only once or twice, but like, this card I think is good enough, and I agree it's going to be outstanding in green black, but that it's good enough other places, and if it's in your black red deck, if it's just got a pocket of synergy with a few flashback cards.
Yeah.
I think that's good enough.
Okay.
And in the number three slot, put my money where my mouth is. I've got Circle of Power. 3 and a black, uncommon sorcery. You draw 2 cards and you lose 2 life. Create a 0/1 black wizard creature token with whenever you cast a non-creature spell. This token deals 1 damage each opponent. Wizards you control get +1/+0 and gain lifelink until end of turn. This is by far my hottest take.
Yeah.
As far as like ranking things, and I do recognize that it is a hot take, but I'm staking my claim. Yeah, yeah, I'm staking my claim on Circle of Power, and I think the black red mage deck really wants that card.
Not a lot of overlap here. My number one is Side Quest, Hunt the Mark. 3 black for an enchantment. When it enters, destroy up to 1 target creature. At the beginning of your end step, if a creature died under an opponent's control this turn, you make a treasure token. Then if you control 3 or more treasure tokens, you transform this into a 5/6 dragon that has 1 and a black, sack another creature or artifact to give it indestructible until end of turn and tap it. My number two is the Final Days, the zombie making, the tapped zombie making sorcery. And my number three is Tonbury, which is single black for a 2/1. It enters tapped with a stun counter on it. But during your turn, this has first strike and death touch.
Like, the fact that we don't have overlap is good. Like, blue, we were all lined up because those are the only 3 reasonable blue uncommons. And I think there are a lot of black reasonable uncommons.
Yeah, I guess, like, The mark for me, like, when I went to look at white, I was like, oh, there's a lot. Like, I looked through.
Yes, white's got a lot of B-minus type
usually
cards.
Usually what happens is, well, I'll just, like, pull up a Sword Scryfall, uncommons, white, look.
Yes.
Then I'll check back on the spreadsheet and see, like, how did I grade cards? Do I need to, like, just clearly select these Bs, or do I need to adjust my grades based on how I'm having a visceral reaction to some of these cards?
Yes, I do the same thing.
So for white, I could have picked like 5 cards. For blue, it was a clear 2 and then a real, what's the third?
Like, what's the third? Yes, I agree.
For black, nothing jumped off the page to me. I didn't like any of these at a B plus level, which is what I was looking for. So these are all kind of like, yeah, there's some C pluses that I like. That's good. I don't think these are very good, powerful cards.
I'm looking at our spreadsheet and you gave Side Quest a B plus, you gave Final Days a B minus, and you gave a card that's not even on your list a B in Shambling Seath, which is 2 and a black for a 3/3, enters tapped.
Oh,
when
yeah.
You cast a non-creature spell, you can pay black.
We have to argue about this card, right?
Well, I don't know that we do. I like the card. I gave it a 0, you gave it a B, which is quite a difference. Quite a difference. I'm kind of coming around on it. I don't love that it enters tapped, but then by the same aspect, I should not love the Final Days because they enter tapped.
And I feel like this is better. This might be better than Final Days now that I'm seeing that they're both tapped. Like, I didn't know the tap thing, so I might replace Final Days with my 3/3 and take Final Days off my list. I don't know.
But Shambling Seath goes so well with Fang. Like, if you're buying this back, drawing a card after you mill it. Like,
yeah.
I like Shambling Seath, too. I don't know. I'm kind of in on black.
I'm here for your excitement. I'm not here for these uncommons, personally.
Okay. That takes us on to red. So, red's commons. I think red's best commons play well in blue-red and red-black. With enough bleed into red-white, I'm a little nervous about red-green. After doing the practice drafts, I think it's more of a green deck than it is a red deck. And I do see it there, but it has a similar problem to black-red to me in that, like, you're really closing some walls off in the format to draft red-green, and it doesn't look like that good of a deck to me to try to close off walls to get into it, you know what I mean? Like, there's not, if you're drafting red-green, there's not like a clear off-ramp into, well, I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to audible into whatever. Like, you're doing red-green, Choco, Landfall. And that's like kind of a tough sell for me at the moment. But I will say, so red's commons.
Wait, hold on. My list. Can I give my color identity first?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We value your opinion here on Lords of Limited.
I appreciate you saying that. I think red gets some of the best capital B ways to interact in the set, and has really nice overlap in three of its four spaces: the red white equipment, the red black non-creature spells, and the red blue non-creature 4+ mana stuff all interacts. And red is the color that I'm happy to get deepest into, I think, behind white. I agree with you. I said red green seems like it's a little on an island by itself, looks the hardest to navigate towards. My guess, it's interesting that you say that you think it's a heavy green deck. Maybe it is, but I feel like the most likely way you'll navigate into it is getting deep into red and then seeing some signposts or seeing some clear bird stuff. But I think that is a deck where I'm just nervous about getting too lost in the synergy sauce, which I think will be an interesting balancing act in general in the format, balancing stuff that's greater than the sum of its parts and balancing just things that are good on rate that don't necessarily point towards, like, maybe you just want to play a 3-mana 3/3 in your red green Choco deck because it's a good rate versus like, but my bird might get landfall and then I do this. And like, I'm just a little nervous about that. I'm not necessarily saying I think red green will be a bad deck, but I think perhaps that approach to red green may lead some people astray.
Yeah. Sounds like we're in a similar place. So red commons, Thunder Magic. This was the one I was like, okay, I got to put a removal spell. And then once that floodgate opened, I put the black one on there too. Thunder Magic is red for an instant. It's tiered. So you've got Thunder for single red to deal 2 damage to a creature, Thundara for 3 and a red to deal 4 to a creature, and Thundaga for 5 red to deal 8 to a creature. But just having the flexibility of shock or deal 4 is really strong, I think.
Yes, I agree with that.
Also, the fact that the deal 4 costs 4 probably actually a benefit, like that it's efficient, yet also if you want to trigger your synergy stuff, you can, like, just everything about Thunder Magic. I think that is also shortlist for top common in the format, like that and Dragoon's Wyvern. So Thunder Magic for me, I've also got Summon GF Efreet, Summon Girlfriend Efreet, Summon Gluten-Free Efreet, I don't know, we'll see. 3/2, chapters 1 and 2, you can discard a card if you do draw a card. Chapters 3 and 4, you add red to your mana pool. This just, I think, is a very powerful, very flexible card. Like, it's just a good card.
It's Fable of the Mirror Breaker at common, baby.
Fable of the Mirror Breaker at common. You love to see it. Yeah, I mean, it's not too far off. I also have Call the Mountain Chocobo on my list. 3 and a red for a sorcery. Search your library for a mountain card, reveal it, put it in your hand, then shuffle. You make a 2/2 green bird creature token with landfall to get +1/+0, and it's got flashback for 5. And a red. So
this is a notable common.
It's so good, isn't it?
Is it?
I think so. You make
outside of red green.
Yeah,
so good.
It's a spell for the red blue deck at 4 mana that makes a body that searches up a land and has flashback.
Yeah.
It's a spell for the black red deck. Like the fact that it's a creature spell for blue red and black red, I think, and it's a 2-for-1 guaranteed.
A four for one potentially.
What not to like?
Rectangles galore. Okay, never mind. I'm on board. I had Thunder Magic on my list. I have Summon GF Efreet on my list. I also have Suplex on my list. 1 and a red sorcery. Choose 1, deal 3 to something. If it would die, you exile it instead or exile target artifact. I do think having the split on this is particularly relevant because a lot of your ability to
like neuter the job select cards is to get rid of the equipment. And then you just leave your opponent with a 1-1 and it's like, oh, it's not great. Whereas the reverse is really the part where the rectangle stuff comes into play, where you're like, am I really trading off with this token? And then it dies into an equipment and they get to move that equipment around. Well, Suplex says, no, you get to kill it with a really nice, like, oh, also it's just a sorcery speed deal 3.
Yeah, Suplex, I left off my list. Clearly, it wasn't on there. It's close. I think you'll find out very quickly. Yeah. I do think Thunder Magic looks better, and I thought Thunder Magic looked good enough that maybe Suplex goes down enough in value that you don't have to prioritize it. But Suplex will be a good card. There's no way it's not going to be a good card.
Okay, uncommons.
Uncommons. I was talking about Red's uncommons. Also, look, really high synergy to me. Blue, red, and red, black. Support for red, white also. And still, like, it's the same feeling as the commons. Number one is a banger. I think shortlist for the best uncommon in the set, which is Choco Comet. Red, red, X sorcery. Deals X damage to any target. And you create a 2/2 green bird creature token with whenever land you control enters. This token gets +1/+0.
Yep, that card's incredible. And that is also my top red uncommon.
The number two slot, I've got Summon Esperama, which is 2 red-red for a 3/3. Chapter one, it deals damage equal to the number of non-creature, non-land cards in your graveyard to target creature and opponent controls. And chapters 2 and 3, wizards you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. I think that card's going to be outstanding in blue, red, and red, black. And then in the number three slot, I've got Samurai's Katana, which is 2 and a red for an equipment with job select. Gives you a 3/3 trample haste and a re-equip cost of 5.
Yeah, I have Choco Comet number one. I have the Katana number two. I love that card. I don't have Esperama on my list. That's another card that I am skeptical about. I put a different one on. I don't love this choice, but so I could be wrong, but I put Prompto Argentum here. It's 1 and a red for a 2/2 with haste. And then it has an ability. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, if at least 4 mana was spent to cast it, you make a treasure token. So it gives you a little rebate. Certainly be great in blue-red, but I think just a 2-mana 2/2 haste with upside is a good card. Let's talk about Summer Esperama. It is, I feel similarly about the white, or to this as I did to the white uncommon summon saga, which is that, but potentially even more so, which is that what happens when you don't want to cast this on turn 4, but this is your 4-drop? What happens when this doesn't kill something? When you just have, like, it's turn 4, you just have one sorcery or instant in your graveyard, and they don't have an X one. You cannot cast this.
But I agree. But I think that the difference in how you and I are evaluating them is, I think you're evaluating them almost as creature first. And those two specifically, the white one and the red one, I'm evaluating as spells that just happen to have a body attached to them with very good effects.
But they're not good spells. The white one I can kind of buy a little bit. 4 mana, deal 4. To a tapped creature, create a token that's going to last for 2 turns that does that thing. Okay. This one, 4 mana, deal damage equal to the number of instants or sorceries in your graveyard to a thing. That's a bad card, even if it comes with a 3/3 pump your wizards for 2 turns.
I think I just disagree. I think when this does the thing, and I agree, it's not always going to do the thing. You're like, it's a build around for sure. And I think you're going to have to build around it. But if you meet the deck building requirements for the card, when you cast it in the right spot, I think it's going to be like an, oh my God, feeling like from you as the opponent, or it's going to feel great as the person who's casting it. And I agree, there's going to be times it'll be strained in your hand. But I think when it's good enough, when it's good, it's Flame Tongue Kabu. And Flame Tongue Kabu is great. Like, it's a harder to use Choco Comet, but it's weird to me that you're like, yeah, Choco Comet is outstanding, and I agree that's no setup cost, but I would also want to work to build a Choco Comet, and I think that's what Summon Esperama is.
I guess you're thinking about it spell first, so I'm not thinking about curving out with it, or maybe I should stop thinking about curving out with it. I'm just like, you're like, it's so good in the red black mage deck, but don't you want to go like Black Mage's Rod on 2, something else on 3, and then there's no spell in your yard? So you're just casting this on like turn 7, and that's how you're thinking about it?
I think so. Maybe that's less good. Like, maybe the body's too irrelevant then. Yeah, you're raising some good points about the card.
He admitted it.
You are. But the wizards you control get +1/+0. I don't know. here's how I think the red black deck's going to play out. I think, like, it says aggro. I think it's going to be like chip damage, chip damage, chip damage. You're going to get your opponent to a low life total. And then between this and the black uncommon that I like that pumps your team and gives you lifelink, you'll be able to do some damage with the spells, and then you'll be able to flunge with them having some power finally to finish your opponent off.
Yeah. But all of that, like, that just... So, okay, great. It's good in red-black, and I guess maybe good in blue-red. It's not good in red-green or red-white. That can't be the second best red uncommon, can it? I mean, I guess it could be. It could be.
Yeah, like, it's probably, I think, after talking it through with you, I think it's probably further away from Comet Choco yeah. Comet than I think that it is. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably where I'm at. Like, I'm seeing it as very close to Choco Comet, and I think it is not quite as close as I want it to be. There's another red card we need to talk about before we move on to green, which is Red Mage's Rapier.
Yeah.
This is similar to Black Mage's Rod. I think Red Mage's Rapier does a lot of things. So I give us a C+. You basically said this doesn't matter much in our grading scale.
Yeah.
So Red Mage's Rapier is one in red for a common with job select. So you get a 1/1, and the equipped creature has, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn and is a wizard in addition to its other types. And it's got an equip cost of 3, which I think is a reasonable equip cost. I think this is basically a 2-mana 3/1. Because I think if you're putting it in a deck with all the other job select stuff, the job select things are going to trigger it, and your opponent's not going to want to trade with it. This is an awkward card, I think, for your opponent to deal with, because they're either trading with it or they're taking 3 a turn. Like, I almost think this is better in some senses than the white cleric making one, the one that makes a 2/2 that attacks and gains you a life, because they're going to be incentivized to trade with this, but they're not going to want to. And then it's going to continue to be a problem. I think this is great in red black because it's going to trigger all your mages. It's great in red white. Like, it's good in red blue as a non-creature spell, and then going to push damage when you're casting your other non-creature spells. Like, basically, the only place I don't like this card is red green.
Calling this a 2-mana 3/1 is egregious. My friend, have you ever been on the draw? Have you ever had to block a creature? Like, if you're ever on the draw and your opponent plays a 2/2, you're just not a happy camper. This is not a 2-mana 3/1. The equip cost of 3 is reasonable as a cost, but it does stone nothing to the creature you're equipping it to. I can see this as a synergy piece in some decks. I don't think it's going to matter. You're definitely not going to have to pick it highly. Like, I'm out on this card personally.
Okay. Yeah. I like Red Mage's Rapier as a piece in blue, red, black, and red, white. I think I'm going to be not like, again, not a crazy high pick, but I think I'm going to be happy to play it in those decks.
Okay. Well, we'll check back in on that card. All right. Takes us on to green. I think green is a tough color for me because I'm very much on my, I'm so aware of the Lords of Limited bit of underrating green. my feelers are up for green a little bit. I think its best strengths are playing to the board. You want good stats, and that's how you leverage what I think green also gets, which is its cheap combat tricks, and its interaction also needs to leverage you having played to the board. The thing that kept sticking out to me when I was evaluating green, which is I didn't love a lot of green's monocolored cards, but all 8 of green's signposts are almost all bangers.
All bangers.
And that was, I was like, that feels like there's got to be some meat on that bone if that's true. So I'm skeptical of green's ability to play, this is sort of to your point, one of your format truths, I'm skeptical of green's ability to play super deep in the synergy space with the like landfall birds, towns, graveyard aspects. But I do think green's sort of like cards that do the thing are good.
Yeah, I feel similar. I think green's commons look best in blue, green, and green, black. And slightly synergistic in those decks, but those decks aren't that high of synergy anyway. I think it's got great uncommons, especially the multicolored ones.
Mm-hmm.
And its uncommons also make the Chocobo landfall deck look like more of a thing. And I do think the other thing that stood out to me more after like thinking about green and doing the practice drafts, I think green red and green white are base green decks. But then that kind of makes green feel like blue in that it's very split, where like you've got like the Sultai high powered stuff, and then you've got the green red and the green white play to the board aggro-y type things. Green red and green white, jury's out for me. I'm like super in on green blue and green black just through the basis of having outstanding cards. I think those cards definitely make the cut. The way I see the Chocobo deck is, I'm just going to shortcut it to Choco. The way I see a Choco deck is, I think it can be good if like everybody's just ignoring all the Choco cards and you reap the benefits of that. It feels tough to me to go after that deck.
I mean, some of those cards are just good. Like, it's not even on my list, but like the flashback spell that's like one in a green, make a Choco with flashback six in a green. And these, all the Chocos are these 2/2s with landfall. It gets ++0 until end of turn. Like, to your point about your equipment, like those 2/2s are going to be 3/2s on your turn a lot of the time. And then, so I'm just saying, like, I feel like going after those things, like those are just good cards. It's where you're going to get messy is where you're like, oh, now do I want to play Rampant Growth in my deck? Do I want to play the 3-mana Rampant Growth combat trick because it's landfall and synergy? I'm like, no, I think that's where you're going to start to make this deck look terrible.
Yes, yeah. And that card, Gisol Greens, is on my sleeper common list.
Mine as well.
The one in a green sorcery. It makes a 2/2 and it's got flashback for 6 in a green. So I can see all that floating around there. So green cards that made my commons list. Summon Fat Chocobo, which is 4 and a green for a 4/4. Chapter 1, you make a Choco. You make a 2/2 green bird creature token with whenever a land you control enters. This token gets +1/+0 until end of turn. And chapters 2, 3, and 4, creatures you control gain trample until end of turn. That's going to be sick. Like, yeah. If you can, that's where the Choco stuff looks good to me, is if you can curb into Fat Chocobo and you're attacking with like 2 or 3 4/2 tramples or something because you've got a double landfall trigger from maybe you flip the bird side quest or whatever. There's ways to do it. So I do think that looks real to me, and Fat Chocobo is going to be a big part of that, I think.
And Fat Chocobo is just like a card that you can't ignore. And so the saga part of this doesn't really even matter, because it's like, what are you going to do? Take 4 twice from this thing before it dies? And then
It's just also outstanding. Like, it's a 4/4 plus a 2/2.
Correct.
This is like stonks. This is another card that's looking like shortlist for top 5 commons in the set.
Yeah.
The other one is Town Greeter. 1 and a green for a 1/1. When ETBs, you mill 4. Put a land card from among them into your hand. If you put a town in your hand this way, you gain 2 life. That looks outstanding for green, black, and green, blue. Do you think Summon Fat Chocobo goes in green, black, and green, blue? It probably does, right? Because it's just
a good card. I think it's just a good card.
Yeah. But it's going to be best in green, white, and red, green.
I guess. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It just looks good to me.
And I think Town Greeter is more only green, black, and green, blue.
You're right. That's why it's not on my list. And I do have another green card. Yeah, Town Greeter is not on my list. I could be wrong. It feels like it's going to be excellent in black, green. I feel like it's not even that important to blue, green in my mind, because I don't know what blue, green does with the body that much afterwards. I really like Bard's Bow personally, and maybe I'm too job select pilled, but this is 2 and a green for an equipment. Job select, equipped creature gets +2/+2, has reach, and is a bard in addition to its other type. So a 3-mana 3/3 with reach, and then its re-equip cost is a hefty 6. But I do still think just 3-mana 3/3 dies into something. 3-mana 3/3 reach dies into something is, I think, really good.
It's strong. I agree. Yeah. I think the re-equip cost is so prohibitive that I'm not so high on that one.
Yeah, it's quite prohibitive. I agree with that.
All right, takes us on to green uncommons. In the number one slot, I've got Summon Fenrir. Expect this to be one of the best uncommons in the set. Still, after now seeing all the cards, this is 2 and a green for a 3/2. Chapter 1, you search your library for a basic land card, put it on the battlefield, tap, then shuffle. Chapter 2, when you cast your next creature spell this turn, that creature enters with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. And chapter 3, draw a card if you control the creature with the greatest power or tied for the greatest power.
Yep, that card looks excellent to me. That's my number one as well.
Number two, I've got Kina Ku Gourmet, which is 2 and a green for a 2/3 uncommon. If one or more tokens will be created under your control, those tokens +1/+1 green frog creature token are created instead, and you can pay 2 to sacrifice a frog to put a +1/+1 counter on Kina. This looks sick in the format.
Yes, chef, I say.
Yes, chef, indeed. And the number three slot, I've got Vanille Cheerful Elsie. This is three and a green for the 3/2. When it enters, you mill two and return a permanent from your graveyard to your hand. The beginning of your first main phase, if you have this and Fang, which is the black 2/3 that I liked, you can pay three black green. If you do, you exile them and meld them into Ragnarok, Divine Deliverance, which again, some super sick uncommon. We talked on the last week about being able to curve into this, and people pointed out in the Discord that you can't curve into it 3/4/5 because it, the trigger happens at the beginning of your first main phase. So you won't have five mana. You won't have hit your land drop for the turn yet.
Correct. I have those same three. I just have number two and number three swapped. But yeah, like all those cards quite a bit. All right, we've alluded to the signposts being almost all bangers, and we've each assembled a list of five of them to shout out as the premium multicolor uncommons.
Yeah, in no particular order, these are just five that stand out, similar to the top 10 commons that matter. So first on my list is Garnet, Princess of Alexandria. Green, white for a 2/2 uncommon with lifelink. Whenever it attacks, you can remove a lore counter from each of any number of sagas you control. Put a +1/+1 counter on Garnet for each lore counter removed this way. So I think this one is insanely high ceiling, but also like really low floor. You have to get a lot. Like if we're assuming that the summon sagas are high picks and good cards, you have to end up with a lot of high picks for this to hit its ceiling.
Yeah, I have this on my list as well, but the more I think about it, the more I'm questioning its existence. It's hard because like I almost feel like I'm like want to punish this card for playing well with other good cards, which doesn't feel like the right thing to do. But it kind of is because you're like, well, if I get all these other good cards, my good card's good. It's like, yeah, but so are other cards. Like your deck, if your deck is full of saga creatures, ostensibly, that's just a good deck.
Yes, like that's the thing that I ran into. This I made this list before doing the practice drafts, and there was some real tension. Like, do you really want to first pick this card and tunnel in on green white?
No,
and I think the answer for me is no.
Yeah,
I think green white's a pretty narrow deck in a format that looks like it offers a lot of really cool things to do and a lot of powerful splashing opportunities in the Sultai space.
Well, I just think green white to me feels like. Because it's, I don't even know what the official WotC label for what green white is doing, but its signposts don't particularly point to something clear. Like this one plays with sagas, the other one is a 4/4 that makes a 1/1 and then cares about you going wide when you attack.
It's green white go wide for reference.
Okay, green white go wide, which Garnet does not particularly point to in any clear way, right? It just wants you to have saga creatures, which is great.
The thing about Garnet is if you do the thing, it's outstanding. It's the one of the best ones if you do the thing. Like if you curve this into summon Chocomaw or whatever you're talking about, like it's really strong. It also does, though, like suffer from what green white suffers from a lot, which is that like if you pick this highly, draft green white, and then your opponent snaps off like thunder magic on your Garnet, all of a sudden your deck looks atrocious. Well,
I don't agree with that because your deck is then full of saga creatures, which are good cards.
Yeah, okay.
The thing I just feel like I want to point out, which is one of my green identity things, is like I think you want to be aware of the decks that are like you keep talking about red black. I think one of the reasons red black appeals to both of us is that it's a high synergy deck. You're going to get really rewarded for seeing the payoffs, the enablers, how the deck becomes greater than the sum of its parts. Decks like green white and green red, I think, are much more going to be about rate. Just like, are you playing good things on turn 2, 3, 4, backed up by tricks and removal? And maybe you'll have some synergy in there, like you're playing Garnet and you're playing some saga creatures, cool, but you're not adjusting your pick orders in such a way where you're making sacrifices in those decks in the way that I think you might be making in some of the higher synergy decks.
Yeah. That checks out. Also on my list, Ignis Scientia. This is the one blue green for a 2/2. Look at the top six, and you can put a land card from among them on the battlefield tapped. And then it's also got the ability one green blue tap exile target card from a graveyard. If a creature card was exiled this way, create a food token. The card just looks outstanding.
I agree.
We're confident about that one being on my list.
2/2.
Shantotto, Tactician Magician. Also on my list, one blue red for an 0/4. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, it gets +X+0 until end of turn, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast that spell. If X is 4 or more, you draw a card.
Yep.
Also have that on my list. Love that.
Number four, Cloud of Darkness. This is absurd. Two black, green, green for a 3/3 uncommon flyer. And it has the ability whenever it enters, target creature and opponent controls gets minus X until end of turn, where X is the number of permanent cards in your graveyard. That looks incredible.
Yeah, that is my bid for best of these of this bunch. But
I agree. Yeah,
I like that card a lot.
And then in the number five slot, and again, not ranking them, but the last one on the list, Garland, Knight of Cornelia, which is black red for a 3/2. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, surveil one, and you can pay 7 to return it from your graveyard to the battlefield transformed into Chaos, which is a 5/5 flyer that when it dies, you put it on the bottom of your library.
Yeah. I want to shout out Cid, Timeless Artificer as well, the 2WB 4/4. It gives artifact creatures and heroes you control +1/+1 for each artificer you control and each artificer card in your graveyard. It also has cycling for white blue. I didn't realize, I mean, it's quite clear, but the job select tokens are heroes. And so this is buffing those, which is like pretty big that this isn't, it's a 4-mana 4/4 anthem for a lot of your stuff.
It's really good.
I think the card's really, really strong.
I think I want Cid ahead of Garnet.
Garnet, I do too. Yeah.
But the other thing that happened to me in practice drafts is both of blue black's uncommons, Lock Coal, which is a 3-mana 2/3 death touch lifelink, that whenever it deals combat damage, you loot, and Ultimisia, Time Sorceress, the 5-mana 4/5 that when it enters or attacks, you surveil two. Like both of those start to look outstanding once you're in like the blue green or the blue black splash territory. Like a lot of Sultai is like getting into towns and some town synergy. And then like you just get access to all of these really powerful uncommons as well.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Let's round out talking about individual cards with any sleeper commons we haven't touched on yet.
Well, did we get to all of your 12 or 13 top commons? How many top commons did you have there?
We did. I sprinkled them in beautifully.
I put an 11th in mine. Oh. We've not gotten to yet. I kept my list of 10, and then I saw your list, and I was like, well, shoot, I'm not staying at 10 if Eden's not. So I added Blitzball to my 10 notable commons list as the 11th after the practice draft that I did, which is 3-mana for an artifact, tap to add a mana of any color, and it has the ability of Ghoul to tap and sacrifice it to draw 2 cards. Activate only if an opponent was dealt combat damage by a legendary creature this turn. I had the sickest practice draft, which makes me so excited to draft this format. I was already excited, and then I drafted that deck and I was like, okay, this format looks incredible. So 2 summers ago, I came to visit you, and all we did was force legends
in Lord of the Rings.
In the Lord of the Rings, and every card is a legend in this format. Like, yes, half the creatures have to be legends. And so Blitzball, pretty trivially easy to enable, and there's also a really cool green white rare that looked atrocious to me until I realized, oh, everything's a legend, and it makes your legends cheaper and then flips and pumps your legends +2/+2. So I think Blitzball is at the center of, I think there's a Blitzball legendary deck that's not like, that's distinct from like town multicolor stuff.
I'm very excited for that. The Summer of Squigglies is back, and I think I'm ready to declare 2025 the year of the Manalith. If we're going from starting column into Dragonstorm Globe, and now you're telling me Blitzball is real, 2025 is the year of the Manalith.
Yeah, I'm here for it. Okay, so sleeper commons that we didn't talk about yet. I have Ice Magic, 1 and a blue for an instant. It's tiered. For 2 mana, you can bounce something. For 4 mana, you can Blizzara to put something on the top or bottom. And for 8 mana, you can Blizzaga to have a creature shuffled into its owner's library. And that's going to be a nice piece for the blue-red deck.
Mm-hmm.
Dreams of Laguna, also on there for me. 1 and a blue for an instant. Surveil 1, draw a card, and then flashback for 3 and a blue. Can see that playing really nicely in the Grixis space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have that on my list as well.
Resentful Revelation, 1 and a black for a sorcery. Look at the top 3, put 1 of them in your hand and the rest in your graveyard. It's got flashback for 6 and a black. Similarly, I can see that being a role player in the Sultai space. Mycidian Elder. This card was getting some hate in the Lords of the Limited Discord, and I'm sticking up for it. This is 2 and a red for a 1/3, and when it enters, you make a wizard. It's 2 bodies.
A wizard is an 0/1 that pings your opponent on non-creature spells being cast.
Correct. Yes. I like this card. I think it's 2 relevant bodies for 3 mana, 2 pieces of cardboard up front, and I think people aren't going to want to, like, they're going to have to interact with the wizard tokens, and they're not going to want it. It's going to feel so terrible suplexing a wizard token.
two relevant bodies is a bit of a stretch when you're talking about a three mana, 1/3 plus an 0/1.
I like Obsidian Elder.
Yeah, I think I'm
see me in 2 weeks.
See me in 2 weeks.
Talk to you after class.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Laughing Mad on my list as well. 2 red for an instant. And it lets you as additional cost cast it. You discard a card and you draw 2 cards. Got flashback, 3 red. That's going to feel good just as a one of in decks that have ways to get into the graveyard, whether that's through looting or self-mill or whatever. Blitzball Shot. Would be remiss if we didn't shout this out for green, white, and green, red. 1 green for an instant. Target creature gets +3/+3 and gains trample until end of turn. And then Shinra Reinforcements. 2 black for the 2/3 that mills 3 and you gain 3 life for the black green deck. I do think if you get Town Greeters, I was drafting a black green deck in one of the practice drafts and I had 4 Town Greeters and I ended up like not really wanting the Shinra Reinforcements because I was worried I was going to go too aggressively through my deck.
Are there ways to not deck in the format? Is there
Elixir, baby?
Okay.
So Elixir is 1 mana for an artifact, enters tapped, and you can pay 5, tap it, exile this artifact, shuffle all non-land cards from your graveyard into your library. So it leaves the lands. You gain life equal to the number of cards shuffled into your library. This way, that is my dream. I also haven't even seen that in the practice drafts yet.
Does it exile, or can you, if you get 2 elixirs, they shuffle each other?
It exiles itself on activation, but like you're totally fine to run 2 elixirs in your 40 card do nothing deck. Like, you're totally fine
that
to do
that. Can't be true. That cannot be true.
This is, I am certain all I'm going to be doing like week 3 onward is drafting double Elixir Blitzball Legend nonsense.
That's so funny. Okay.
I already have so many pet cards in this format and I haven't even played any of them yet.
I can't tell if you're actually excited about this set because of the set or just because it's June and you're on summer break.
Am I on a summer high?
Yeah.
No, I think it's the combo because I've always been worried. Like sometimes the summer sets have been like, whatever. Like we used to get like whatever M20 when I was on summer break.
Yeah.
This format looks sick and I am here to draft a lot of it. I'm here for Vegas. I'm here for all of it.
Yeah. All right. Love it. Yeah. Any more on your list?
Yes. Last one, which is Cornered by Black Mages, which is 1 BB for a sorcery. Target opponent sacks a creature of their choice and you make an 0/1 wizard.
So I went back and forth on this card. I ultimately did put it on my sleeper commons list. It was in my first pass list of cards I wanted on my notable commons list. This card is either going to be great or garbage, right? It's not going to be just fine.
Well, I think it'll be like you're never cutting it from a black red deck, even if it's mid. I don't think it's.
You're never cutting it.
I think it's a black red gold card. I think it's a black red gold card. Yeah, I think that's the only place you're running it. Otherwise, Sephiroth's Intervention is just way better, which is 3 black instant, kill something, gain 2.
Right. If you don't care about
every other non-red black deck wants that.
Maybe black white. If the sacrifice stuff is real, getting the body plus it is nice. But the sacrifice stuff is probably not.
I'm not buying that. The sacrifice stuff looks loose to me.
We've talked about most of the cards that were on my list. I do want to shout out Slash of Light. 1 white instant, deal damage equal to the number of creatures you control, plus the number of equipment you control to target creature. I think that's going to be a really good cheap interaction spell for basically every white deck. You shouted out all the 3 black cards I wanted. I don't like the Land Cyclers largely, but I do like Balam T-Rexor, 4 GG for a 6/6 trample. When it enters, you gain 3 life and it has the buyout of Forest Cycling 2. I think that card has potential to be a player and should shout out Crossroads Village, an ETB tapped land. As it enters, you choose a color and you add a mana of the chosen color when you tap it.
Yeah. I like all those cards as well.
Anything else before we wrap up with our format takeaways?
I don't think so. I'm ready to get to the takeaways and get to drafting this format. So early access next week, we should shout out, is on Wednesday. Both you and I will be streaming. Thanks to WotC for hooking us up with those free preview accounts. As well as we should shout out the Live Vegas show again. We should be shouting that out every week. So if you're traveling to Las Vegas, please join us on Friday evening at 5:30 p.m. in the showcase panel room. We plan on seeing you at 5:30 p.m. in the showcase panel room if you're going to Vegas. We should also shout out that we've organized Lords of Limited community drafts on Friday during the day at Vegas. So Discord or not, we'll link this in where you download the episode on your podcast platform of choice. We have a Google form and we're planning for drafts at 10 a.m. on Friday and 2 p.m. on Friday. So we're going to draft with the community. We'll let you know, like, the forum collects your email address. We'll set some pods up via email addresses. We'll let you know the location via email, but we want people to show for this if you sign up. So we want to kind of treat it like a ticketed event, that sort of thing. It's there's no cost.
Sanctioned,
it's free.
Yeah.
Yes, it's nothing like that. This is just our own thing, but we want to meet people who listen to the podcast, and we want to draft with people who listen to the podcast. That's one of the reasons that we're going to the convention. So just show up, bring your three Final Fantasy packs, and we'll get some community drafts going. 10 a.m. on Friday and 2 p.m. on Friday. The PTQ is already closed, so if you haven't registered for that, come draft with us.
Yeah, love it.
All right, key takeaway time for me. While removal is not necessarily going to be a high pick, I think you're going to need to save your premium removal spells for key uncommons and key rares for your opponents. Most of those have a one turn window in which you can kill them. So I don't think we're in the world of like, okay, I need to spend my mana, I'm going to snap off my removal spell on your common card or whatever. And most of the commons make so many bodies, you're not going to want to do that anyway. But you are going to have to time your removal for the cards that matter.
Nice. I like that.
I just want to reiterate, format looks like Jeskai Synergy versus Sultai Power to me, and with other cool stuff in there. Like, I don't want to be reductive to the format, but that's just like a broad stroke. And I plan to start Jeskai. And again, I wrote this before doing the practice drafts. Plan to start Jeskai, but I think the Sultai Power stuff is very real also. It's green black. That space just has so many intrinsically powerful cards.
Does it?
I think it does.
Yeah. Okay.
And lastly, I think if we're just to reiterate color power rankings, archetype power rankings, that sort of stuff, I think I expect red white to be great, blue white to be great. I think the green black looks excellent to me. I think red black's a deck. I think blue red's a deck. The only ones I'm a little nervous about, I think probably easier to say the ones I'm nervous about than the ones that I like. I'm a little nervous for green white. I'm a little nervous for green red. And I'm a little nervous for black white.
Yeah, those are often I feel like the red, green and green white decks are often ones that we're nervous about in these high synergy formats. And I think part of the solution will be to just like, I think those decks will have success. It just may not necessarily be, as I was saying, in the synergy space.
Yes. And I think if you're looking for offbeat stuff, Towns looks like a deck. Like, I don't know that you're aggressively going to pick the Towns, but a lot of the Sultai soup stuff bleeds into Towns, and I think that's going to be really cool. And Blitzball Legends, baby. Blitzball Legends.
Okay, mine, my three key takeaways are, one, this is mostly a message for myself. Don't get cute. Yes. Yes, this is a synergy set, but the good cards are still the good cards. Like,
yes.
don't level yourself. Don't warp your pick orders too much. Don't be passing like B level cards because you got a synergy C for your deck. Like, just take
we're not allowed to change card evaluations after early access. Card evaluations are locked in.
That's already
after we've drafted multiple days in a row.
That's deep in the core memory there. Number two, I think for week one, knowledge of archetype skeletons will be crucial for success, because it'll let you know which cards are the flexible cards and which cards are the true, like, oh, this is a blue card, but it's only a card I want in my blue-white deck.
Yes, and that's big. Like, I think having thought ahead of time about what you expect the decks to look like and what is pulling you towards the decks. Like, I already have a clear vision of that, but if you haven't spent as much time looking at the spoilers we have, mm-hmm. Like, that's really big, is knowing, like, well, this card makes me want to draft this deck. Like, having that sort of thought process ahead of time.
Yeah. And as a sort of hedge towards color rankings or whatever thoughts about colors, I do think for me, number three, white and red are the colors I'm happiest to start a draft in terms of getting deep into them. And I think the other three colors are going to be colors I want to bring on board once I've got some signposts that lead me there, or perhaps some powerful, you know, bomb rares or whatever. But white and red, in terms of what it offers at non-rare, are the colors I'm happiest to get deep into because of not only the power level, but also the archetype bleed that they offer.
Yeah. Love all of that.
Okay. That's it. We've potted as much as we can.
We've potted as much as we can. Go forth. Best of luck to everybody at your pre-releases. Mm-hmm. I am so stoked for this format.
I think it's going to be really fun. I mean, I can't remember the last time there was a set where I didn't say that after the Crash Course, but I'm jazzed and I'm excited. Like, I feel like we've got a really nice overlap. Feels like the Venn diagram is, there's a pretty big middle section in terms of what you and I expect about the format, not only in terms of broad strokes, but also individual cards. But then there's some outliers there, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks. All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. We've got links to our Patreon page, our tier list, which will be updated once we get our hands on the cards, our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively. All of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.